Well, good morning, everyone. It's good to see you. When you think of Austin, what monuments or institutions come to mind when you think of our city? All right, so turn to a neighbor and just share the first thing that comes to mind. Go ahead and do that. All right, let's hear some of these. When we think of Austin, what do we think of? Hi, how are you? Okay. Anybody else? Food trailers, good. Barton Springs, excellent. What's that? Cathedral of Junk, okay, very good. Town Lake, the Capitol, rats, bats. I was like, really? I haven't seen the rats yet. Is it cool? Should I check it out? So there's a lot of things you think of when you think of Austin. And so this morning, to get us started, in the spirit of Labor Day, as for some of us, our summer is coming to a close and fall is beginning, here's a video on Barton Springs.
Barton Springs was the first place that I came to in Austin. And I remember looking out over the pool and just thinking it was absolutely incredible. That was just kind of the beginning of falling in love with Austin. And there's a lot of incredible artists that come to Barton Springs and just can't help but create while they're here. Submerged is a participatory photography project with the swimmers of Barton Springs Pool. We're asking people to take photographs of the beautiful underwater garden that is Barton Springs. We're really interested in seeing the springs the way everyone sees them.
This is the age of photography. So all the documentaries are about the politics or how beautiful and spiritual it is. But the other aspect to Barton Springs is you come here and see people jump in the water and scream because it's cold and it's fun and it's hilarious. When I saw that happening, it's like, yes, this is what the Springs is about. Fun and beauty and joy and happiness. It would be different if it just were this quiet, spiritual place all the time, but it's not. It's a mix of all those things. Everyone should submit something to the Submerge contest.
I love that connection between the sort of man-made and the human-maintained space with this just sort of feeling of wildness. I love swimming around in the flowers and seeing all the fish. It's just this incredible experience that you won't get anywhere else.
I hope that people see what Barton Springs brings to the community. Some people come here just for their lap swimming. They get here in the morning, they swim their laps, and they leave. And then there's other people that just come here with their friends to sunbathe. I think it's a really personal thing what people get out of it.
I want them to feel like they just jumped in the springs. I want them to feel refreshed and experience the visual lushness of Barton Springs. I want them to have good conversations with people that don't really interact or know each other and get them to see Barton Springs through each other's eyes. It's going to be one heck of a party.
All right. And so when you think of Barton Springs, so who's been? Show of hands, most of us. So they kind of touched it on it in the video. You could possibly say there's a few categories. You have the observers. You have the ones who just kind of lounge on the side. They don't even jump in, but they're like the people watch. They're observers. And then maybe there's the participants who kind of jump in. They'll do the cannonball. They'll swim. They'll float on it, right? And then you could say that there's a third category. And they're not just participants, but they're creators. And they see the spring, and they see Austin as this canvas to create on. And I would propose that without this category of creators, what you think of Austin doesn't exist. ACL doesn't exist. South by Southwest doesn't exist. East Austin Studio Tours, Blues on the Green. It's this group of creators that not only saw a city, not only saw a pool, not only saw this lush lawn, but they saw this canvas to create on. And I want to propose this morning that maybe when it comes to the church, maybe we could say there are similar categories. That maybe when people think of the church, you've got observers, and maybe these people think of a church as this location in a box, and they see their role as passive attendees. They just sit and they just kind of watch. And maybe there's another category of people that are participants. Maybe they'll get involved, do some things, they'll, you know, use their gifts. But maybe there's this last category of creators. in this category sees the world and their workplace and our neighborhoods as this canvas to live the church. And for the last 7 years, we've ended our liturgy with a benediction. And then at the end, there's this one phrase, now go and live the church, live as the church, that you can't go to church, you can't attend the church, but you can leave these doors and live as the church. And so this morning and over these next few weeks, we're going to jump off the lectionary for a little bit, and we're just going to talk through, what does that mean? And so this morning, just spell out in detail, okay, what's a vision, what's a picture for that? And then the next 4 weeks is, how does Vox facilitate rhythms so that we don't go to church, but each and every one of us, we've been entrusted with these talents and these resources, and we leave the doors each week, and we live as the church in our city. And so this morning, we're going to be in the book of Micah. We're going to have it on the screens. If you want to turn to a neighbor, read Micah 6:6-8, and then we're actually going to walk through the entire book today, but we're going to kind of capture it through these few verses. So Micah 6, verses 6 through 8. Read it to a friend, and we'll jump in. All right, go.
All right.
So I'm going to kind of set up the context. So it's a little technical, if you could stay with me. So by the time Micah rolls around, he's a prophet. And so prophets, you could call today, we would call them probably activists, performance artists, poets. They were the ones that lived in cities and in the world and basically pointed to say, hey, this wasn't God's vision for the world. This isn't how things were supposed to be. So by the time Micah rolls around, the kingdom is split. So if you remember, if you rewind all the way back, God was like, okay, you're going to be my people. You're going to be an example of how I love you. You're going to love the world like I love you. And they're like, well, we kind of want our own king. So they choose Saul. Saul was tall, good looking, didn't work out so well. So the next king was David. And then his son was Solomon. So after Solomon, the kingdom splits. You've got north and south. And so if you go to the north, these are the successions of the kings. These are the kings of Israel from the 10th through 8th century BC. All of them were wicked. They were supposed to carry out God's vision for the world. They kind of carried out their own vision for their own gain. So by the time you've got Micah in the 8th century, he's in the burnt orange. He's a contemporary of Isaiah and Hosea. So they were activists and poets and prophets at the same time. Okay, if you go to the southern kingdom, next slide, these are all the kings, and out of them all, there were eight that were good. So if you see Micah in the middle in the burnt orange, where he's writing this is he's probably coming off of the heels of Hezekiah, who's a good king, probably in the reign of Manasseh, who wasn't so great. Okay, so these are the prophets, these are the kings. So this book starts out, and in chapter one, he writes poetry. And he's basically saying, this isn't God's vision for the world. This isn't how it was supposed to be. But he does it in a real beautiful way. And it doesn't really capture it well in the English. But from verse 10 to 12, the literal translation would be like this. Oh, in weep town, you will weep not. In dust town, you will roll in dust. In beauty town, your beauty will be shame. He's saying, this isn't God's vision for the world. This isn't how we should be living. In chapter 2, he basically says, okay, if you keep doing this, these are the consequences. You play this out a few more years, this is what's going to happen. And then in chapter 3, he kind of goes into the leaders of the nations. And he's like, for the civic, the spiritual, the moral leaders, you were supposed to carry out God's vision. And you're carrying out your own vision for your own gain. So we come to this verse. And this is what I like about this book. So he starts on chapter 1. When we see injustice, a lot of times we like to blame categorically, right? So this is what was happening in Micah's day. The northern kingdom was like, well, you know, if the southern kingdom get their act together, the southern kingdom's like, well, the northern kingdom, right? And they're pointing fingers. In chapter 1, he names both the capitals of both the kingdom, and he's like, it's not us versus them, it's all of us. And I feel like we need to hear that. We live in a world and a society where it's, well, if the left could just get it right, well, if the right would just stop, and we're pointing fingers, and we're becoming more and more polarized, and it starts out, and it's like, no, it's not us versus them, it's all of us. Then at the beginning of this verse, they're asking now. Now, with these indictments, what do we do, right? In verse 6, it's like, do we do more? Do we give more? Do we bow down more? Is that the response to this? So this is what Micah says. We pick it up in verse 8. He says this. He has shown you, O mortal, okay, not God. He has shown you what is good. The word good there is the same word used in Genesis 1. So God creates the heavens and the earth, and he's like, that's good. Right? He separates the land from the, that's really good. Right? He's got the vegetation and the trees. He's like, that's really, really good. Right? And he's creating, and it's God's original vision, and it's good. And what Micah is saying, God has shown you his original vision. And what does the Lord require of you? To act? The word act there is literally the word create. It's the same word used in Genesis 1. So he's shown you his original vision, what is good. Now create, make something. And then the word justly is the word right. So what you could say in Micah 6:8 is he's saying this. In light of all this injustice, in light of like this world gone wry, right? In light of all that, this is what you do. God has shown you what his original vision is. Now make that right. Make right God's original vision. And maybe a question for us to ask is, what's God's vision for this world? Like for your family, for your work, for your schools, for your neighborhood, what's God's vision for that? For our own lives, what's God's vision for your life? Before the foundation of the earth, the prophets write. Before you were in your mother's womb, he knew the number of hairs on your head. There was this vision for your life. God's like, one day I'm going to put so-and-so in Austin in 2014 with these gifts, this talent, in this time, with these things to fix. What's God's vision for your life? And I propose that in Micah's time, things had gone awry because they were like, I don't really think God's vision is cutting it. This is my vision for the kingdom. And you fast forward, and I think you can narrow down the world's problems, poverty, injustice, exploitation, to leaders after leader, generation after generation, say, you know what? I think I have a better vision for this world. You know, I think maybe a way to understand it, when you think of animals, it makes a little more sense. Right? There's a vision for what animals should do. So there's a film called Blackfish right now. Has anyone seen it? So it's about these whales in SeaWorld. And so this one whale is a 12,000-pound killer whale. And he's been linked to 3 deaths of workers in SeaWorld. So this documentarian starts uncovering and finds out that there's all this cover-up. It goes all the way back to when they found this whale as a baby off the coast of Iceland. And then put it in a box without light for days. Then put him in a tank with bigger whales that picked on him. And then basically has gone through like isolation and emotional trauma. And now is acting out. And the basic premise of this film is this. That a vision for a killer whale is not in this tiny tank. They were made to be in the ocean. And every killer whale that's been in the ocean has been gentle. And has never acted in violence towards human beings. Because it's a killer whale. And it would be the same thing as if you took a bear that's majestic and strong, like a grizzly, like a brown bear, right? You put him off a cliff and just nudge him off. He can't hang with like a baby eagle. The baby eagle would be just flap harder, right? It's a bear. It'd be the same thing as putting a lion, this grand majestic lion, in the bottom of the sea. And it can't hold anything to a plankton because it's a lion. And what was God's vision for its existence? And what's God's vision for yours and for mine? A couple years ago, I took a sabbatical, and we were 5 years in a box. I was burnt out. I was tired. I was this close to getting in a car and just driving. It's like, I'm gone. And so the leadership was gracious enough to say, hey, you know, just take a break and take some time. And I came back from that, and I didn't have really any enlightening moments. I felt kind of rested. The kids were starting school mid-August. I was technically on sabbatical, so I dropped them off to school one morning, and I just rode my bike down to Fiesta Gardens on the east side of Town Lake. And I remember I just sat there, And I started reading Psalm chapter 1. And it talked about how a tree planted by streams of water, that its leaves do not wither. And I was reading that, and then I stared out at this tree planted in Town Lake. And I thought, if this tree just lives out its own vision for its life, his life is pretty easy. He doesn't have to wake up every morning and go, what do I eat? What do I do? What's my future? He just exists as God's vision, his intended vision. If this tree at any point goes, you know what? I think I can do better. I think maybe there's better waters to be planted in. Maybe there's a better spot on Town Lake, and just starts marching around looking for somewhere. His life gets so hard and so complicated. And then Jesus comes as this perfect vision of what God intended. And he saw everyone just tired and weary because we're trying to live out someone else's vision. And trying harder doesn't work. Running faster doesn't work. And Jesus goes, come, all you who are weary and heavy laden, you guys look tired. Come here, right? Just do what I do. I am the perfect vision of what God intended. If you live in this way, it's kind of easy. My yoke is light. Take that. It's a lot better than the one you've been carrying. And for us to live the church, I think it's a great question to ask. What's God's vision for your neighborhood? What's God's vision for your workplace? Be specific. When you wake up, you change, you have coffee, you have breakfast, you walk into wherever you're working, what's God's vision for that place? We live in one of the most resourced places, resource generations the world has ever seen. With more education, with more stuff, with more information, with more access. What was God's vision for that? And are we living it out? And Micah goes to this nation, and for generations they hadn't. And he's like, God's shown you what is good, that vision, that initial vision. Now make that right. Live in that way. Let's keep going. So he keeps going, and then he says, in this translation, it says, now act justly, right? So the word is love mercy. Some translations say act justly. So the word love there is the word used between human friendships. So it's saying befriend, love in a befriending way. And the word mercy there is most commonly translated as kindness, okay? So what he's saying there is now live in a way to make right God's vision for the world, but we're not done. That's like the baseline. After that's done, live in a way where you befriend kindness. Maybe I'll explain it this. I have a chart. So, all right. Now let's say there's justice, okay? So that would be God's vision made right. So everything that's not, next slide, we could call injustice, okay? But then Jesus comes, and then in chapter 4 and chapter 5 of Micah, so in the first three chapters, it's kind of indicting, right? He's angry. He's like, this isn't how it should work. Chapter 4, chapter 5 gives this beautiful picture of the Messiah that will come and make things right. And one of the pictures he gives of this Messiah is he takes everyone's weapons. It's like he takes people's swords and his plowshare, and there's going to be peace. And it says now this king will be this king of Israel that will be struck on the cheek. This is how he's going to change the world, through kindness and compassion. His cheek will be struck. And it's this beautiful picture, next slide, of mercy. If you go to the next slide. We could say then that everything that isn't justice is cruelty, okay? Then we bring it to the point of justice, but that's not enough. That we now need to live in the way of kindness. Next slide. So you could say then that everything that is not just is a Darwinian world. I think Darwin was a genius. He accurately captured the world I live in. That's kind of how it works. It's dog eat dog. The strongest survive. Day to day in your workplace, in corporate America, it is Darwinian. And then Jesus comes and says, but there's going to be another way and a better way. And it's going to be called the kingdom of God. It's going to be ruled with kindness. Next slide. Okay? So you can say then there's the world and then the church. I'm not talking about physical spaces. It's just the way of the world and the way of the church. Next slide. Okay? Keep going. So one time Peter comes to Jesus and he asks Jesus, So how many times should I forgive? So I don't know if someone had just wronged him. So he's thinking, okay, I've learned probably that it's not eye for an eye. I probably shouldn't take revenge. Okay, I'm supposed to forgive, but how many times, right? And what's beautiful about that is right before he asks that, Jesus goes, when two or more are gathered, there I am with you. He's giving a picture of the church. And then Peter goes, how many times should I forgive? And then if you go to the next slide, Jesus, this is now the way of the church. It's unlimited. It's the way of grace. It's the way of kindness. Go to the next slide. So God in the Old Testament tells Jonah to go to Nineveh, right? And he doesn't go. Why? Because of his calling, it is. But what he rejected was that Nineveh was the most violent place on earth, the most violent city on earth. They were the largest city on earth at that time, 500,000 people. They beheaded people, would hang them on stakes. They practiced post-birth abortions. If they didn't want the baby come up, then they kill them. So it was just a violent place. And in the end, Jonah goes, you know why, God, I didn't go? It wasn't because I was scared. You were sending me as an agent of kindness. He says, I didn't go because you are kind and compassionate. You are slow to anger, abounding in love. I knew that if I went, God, you would forgive them and show the mercy. So he's like, nah. If you go to the next slide, it's the way of Jesus. Keep going. And then Jesus says this. Now the kingdom of God is here and is at hand. And the question is then, which story, which way do we perpetuate? So the question I have here is now this. So if this is the way of the church, this would change societies. It changed Nineveh. It did. How many stories can you think of in the last decade of the American church that has lived this out? The one story that I keep coming back to is one story that made the media. It was the Roberts case in the Amish community. This guy comes in, lines up school-age kids, and pops them in the back of the head. Boom, boom, boom. And the most outrageous part of that story is that history will remember that the most outrageous act was not the act of violence. History will remember that story that the most outrageous act was the response of the community. Within minutes, they released a statement of forgiveness. They reached out to the family of the murderer who killed their own children. They set up a charitable foundation for the guy who killed their own kids. And my question is, why are stories like this uncommon rather than common? Why are they extraordinary rather than ordinary? And then I'll just say this. People ask me all the time, Gideon, what's your vision for Vox? And I'm always like, I don't know. People will live the church, right? And then people get super confused by that. They're like, what? I don't know what that means. And I think this is what this means. I think my hope is in 50 years. So some of us will be 90. Just think about that. That we'll have a community of people and that we'll engage cruelty and injustice. It's the world we live in, and we'll go neck deep, head first into it. But we won't engage with internet flame wars. We won't engage by picketing. We won't engage by like Facebook arguments. That we will leave a trail like the stories of the Amish community. In places where forgiveness shouldn't have happened, it happened. And that stories in this community will not be extraordinary, but they will be ordinary. And I pray in 50 years, we'll be like this slug leaving a trail. I don't know why I thought of that. But like this slug leaving this trail of kindness, mercy, grace, and forgiveness. And it starts with us. So think of that person who's hurt you and wronged you. I have that person. What was the last conversation you had with them? And what will be our next one? Think about those systemic things that get us so angry. Like Trayvon Martin, I can't read anything to do without just getting so angry. Am I going to join that with more anger? There's enough anger there. Do they need more anger? And what does it look like to come systemically with grace and kindness And Jesus goes, the kingdom of God is here and is at hand. And will we live as the church? And then he finishes here, and I kind of like how he finishes. And he goes, just walk humbly with God. And I love that. That we won't walk alone like a lot of us Americans like to do. It's like the Wild West, right? I won't even worship with anyone. I'm alone, right? Let's walk with God together. And then we'll walk humbly. And I propose that if you're in the presence of greatness, you actually don't have to try to be humble. When you encounter greatness, humility naturally comes. I don't know, have you guys seen, Kyrie Irving's a basketball player. He's like a young guard. He plays for the Cleveland Cavaliers. He's a good basketball player. He showed up dressed up as an old man onto the playground, and there was this huge like internet campaign. You can check out the clip.
I got him. Knock down. Backboard next time. Oh, watch
it. Told you I couldn't do this.
All right, come on. Yeah, I'm here. Oh, get off. That's a pocket pass. Where'd that come from?
It's like old times, you and me. Here we go.
Screen.
Whoa! Oh, yeah! Yeah.
Don't, Tom.
Oh. I got your help. Get out of here.
Not my house.
Jump, young blood. We home, baby.
We home.
Back, baby. the old white guy is Kevin Love. And you can, if you watch it again, you can see the posture of the people around them changing. The greater they got, the more humble everyone else got. And for us, Vox doesn't ever need to be great. We don't. But we need to follow in the way of a great God. We don't need a great vision. God's had a great vision for this world from the get-go. And we just need to get in line. And my prayer is that we don't attend the church. That we don't go to church. We gather to remember. And then we're sent out through these doors. And Vox started 7 years ago as a bunch of friends who really didn't know what they're doing. We still don't. But we set out and we said, what does the church look like in this city? And we saw this canvas of a city in our neighborhoods. And this is our story.
Emotions are heated and running high over Chester's nightclub in East Austin. That's where a deadly police shooting happened more than a week ago.
Now, this is home video from Chester's the night Kevin Brown ran from police and was fatally shot by Sergeant Michael Olson.
Where are the leaders? Why don't you, all these people sitting here, where were you?
Community members asked police how they plan to rebuild the trust in East Austin, and in particular, the youth.
What are you thinking about these kids over here? You're thinking about your own damn self. Quit being selfish.
The former site of a controversial nightclub will soon be given new life as a community center and church.
Chester's nightclub, where Kevin Brown was shot and killed, is no longer in existence. A church is now renovating the property to become a community center.
The new tenants are part of a Christian group called Vox Venia, and they've already started renovating the inside of this building. You can see old drywall and wood has been taken out. This group is hoping for a new beginning here, and so is the neighborhood.
Gideon Sang. I'm one of the pastors here at Vox Venia. I was riding my bike. I stumbled across this one-story building that was boarded off. There was a fence that went probably 8 feet high. You can't even see into the building. And it looked abandoned and closed. But there was a number on it that said, you know, it was available, call this number. And so my first thought was, this looks affordable. I think we can afford this. And so we called the number. We found out that it was a BYOB bar called Chester's. The neighborhood had been trying to get rid of it for months and months. And then it wasn't until that shooting that the city shut it down. We rolled in. There was condoms, needles, vodka bottles, mold, cockroaches. And we looked around and we said, well, you think this could be a good place to be a church? So you stepped in. There was a dance floor over there, a DJ booth that went up probably three steps. And then around the building, there were five layers of drywall because they were trying to soundproof the place. And then, so the bar was the one thing we still kept. And then everything else, we pretty much gutted it to what it looks like now.
I want to say thanks to God. Yesterday, we had our first brunch as part of our work event. We had 20 people out there. We had three National Charity League moms with their daughters that were 7 to, you know, 15, 16 years old. We had 60-year-old homeless people. We had homeless people with Asperger's. We had a guy who tried to commit suicide and failed, you know, less than a year ago. We had a guy that's been on the streets since 1980. He's going to get a home in a week. And we all sat down, and we had this beautiful meal together, and we had all this awesome conversation. It's just been an incredible blessing to be part of. So for that, let's bless the Lord.
Hope it would represent like a restoration from something that was a negative kind of sore spot in the community. To something now where there's life and creativity and collaboration.
And so we join with all who have lived in your light, O God, as we lift our voices in the chorus that rings through eternity.
Tracy was the one who put this together for us, and she's in there in the back. Can we say thank you to her for telling our story? And so 7 years ago, we set out as a group of friends who saw the city, our workplaces, our neighborhoods as a canvas. And the question for us is, will we come as observers, participants, or will we join in as creators and live as the church? And so, Vox, this has been our prayer for season after season, and this is my prayer for us this morning. May God bless us with discomfort at easy answers, half-truths, and superficial relationships, so that he may live deep within our hearts. May God bless us with anger at injustice, oppression, and the exploitation of people, so that we may work for justice, freedom, and peace. May God bless us with tears to shed for those who suffer pain, rejection, hunger, and war, so that we may reach out our hand to comfort them and to turn their pain into joy. And so, Vox, may God bless us with enough foolishness to believe that we can make a difference in the world, so that we can do what others claim can't be done, to bring justice and kindness to all our children and the poor. And we pray this in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.